Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, first heard here on the station each Tuesday from 1 p.m. and available shortly after as a podcast. Tech Talk, of course, it's our opportunity as blind and partially sighted people from across the UK and beyond to get together each week and explore the world of technology. And it is, of course, your show. We would be nothing without you, so do get in touch. The email address, as always, is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Questions, comments, voice notes, all of that, very welcome. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we will be heading into the bathroom as one company aims to make their latest shower more accessible for blind and partially sighted people. We'll be talking about the biggest news from the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, coming out of Las Vegas last week. And we will be catching up with Hubert for part two of that series, Getting Started with VoiceOver on Your iPhone. So stick around. It's another Tech Talk. Speaking of Hubert, he's here along with Callum Stoneman. Welcome in, gentlemen. How are you both?
All good. How are you?
Yeah, smashing. So, Callum, let's come to you first. What's grabbing your attention this week in the world of technology?
Well, I guess apart from all the latest from CES, which we're going to get into, I think the big news of the week has been the release date for the Apple Vision Pro. We've had this confirmed for the 2nd of February. There is a bit of a catch, though. It's only been released in the US, at least for now.
Have you booked your flight?
To be fair, I think the flight would probably be cheaper than the Vision Pro. I don't know. I can't decide. I don't think we can't get this here in the UK anyway, but I'm going to be watching with interest, but I don't know what's in it for us at the minute, I guess is my thing.
Well, potentially, if you go to a venue, like a museum or some sort of public venue, if there are Vision Pro headsets available for loan, they could potentially enhance that experience.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, potentially. Yeah, that is a good point.
So one to watch. Maybe you're not going to buy half a dozen and just keep them around the house, but certainly in certain contexts and training scenarios, there could be real world applications for those of us who are blind and partially sighted. So we'll follow that one with great interest. Hubert, what have you got?
Speaking of CES, the one little article that I've seen on CES, it seems that a lot of companies are trying to come up with more interesting input devices each year. So I've heard of this QWERTY communicator by this company called OneCom, where basically you're supposed to be able to input QWERTY keyboard kind of commands, which, you know, have like 36 keys using a 6-key module. There's not much that's known about this. They have been at CES, but I've not seen too much about it. It's still something I'm exploring, because it sounds intriguing how they want to achieve this, and with very limited information. It's an intriguing concept.
6-key entry sounds a bit like Braille. Curious to know what grabbed your attention from CES, of course, kicks off the year each year, the Consumer Electronics Show last week in Las Vegas. And we'll be hearing more about that later on with Steve Tyler. So stay tuned. It's another Tech Talk. We often talk about accessibility and how products can be made easier to use for blind and partially sighted people. But perhaps one place that we often don't consider is in the shower. Well, RNIB has been collaborating with Miro Showers, who've developed Select Flex, which is an easy-to-control shower. And here to tell us more is Susanna AD, who is Head of Product Marketing with Miro Showers. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio. Why did you decide to make an accessible shower?
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to speak and tell you about this shower. So we know that the mixer shower market in particular, that's growing, and consumers sort of choosing that type of shower for quality, reliability, and thermostatic safety as well. So that's where there's a real benefit there through temperature stability. And this shower really builds on Myra's strengths with the advanced electric shower. So that has been designed with inclusive principles and aspects of that product concept. So it's bringing learnings from that into a mixer shower, which is a different type of product and how it functions to a new audience.
Right. I mean, Suzanne, don't assume that I know what you're talking about here at all, because I go into the shower and I twist a dial and water hits me on the head. I have no idea whether I have a mixer shower or any other kind of shower. So can you just clarify for us what you mean by a mixer shower as opposed to any other type of shower?
Of course. Yeah. So electric showers, they heat water at the point of use. So that is using a cold feed. So that's typically purchased as a kind of a replacement option. It's a really good backup option because it doesn't use stored hot water off the boiler. A mixer shower, however, does. So with that, you get a benefit of increased pressure of the water, a higher flow rate as well. And then most mixer showers on the market are thermostatic, so you get the added benefit of temperature stability as well.
Right, so the kind of shower we're talking about is going to be in a house where somebody's got a big, you know, water tank with hot water, maybe in a cupboard on the landing or somewhere else.
Yeah, that's it. So it's the sort of the chrome product that would be sort of part of the plumbing, sits on the wall, on the tile.
Gotcha. Right. OK. So why did you decide to create a sort of an accessible or an inclusive shower mixer then?
Yeah. So looking at other products out there, there's not a mixer shower that has been specifically designed with inclusive and accessible sort of design principles and design features. So again, sort of recognizing that that's a real opportunity for Myra Showers to enter into that space. And as I mentioned, sort of taking some of our learnings from the advanced electric shower, which is a different type of product, but how that works into a mixer shower as well. So building on our success with the advanced shower.
Right. OK. So how did the collaboration then between RNIB and Myra Showers come about?
So Myra has some history of working with the RNIB before the Select Flex project. So launched the current version of the Myra Advanced Shower back in 2010. Myra worked with the RNIB on that. So we sort of re-engaged and opened that relationship again. But I think it's fair to say we've kind of progressed that a lot more this time. We've sort of collaborated on much more of a design together. And yeah, kind of recognising that it was really important to the stakeholders with this type of shower and the specification of it as well.
Right. And what did that process involve?
Yeah, so the key part of the collaborative design with the RNIB was the focus group with the user study. So Myra Showers prototyped different concepts of the Select Flex shower and then different design iterations of some of the key features, such as the on-off button and the new shower head, which I'll talk about in a bit more detail. And then once we had confidence with the design consistency, we put forward the design and the prototypes and the actual parts for the RNIB for user testing through the focus group. The feedback from that was really helpful and, you know, really kind of drove the design aspects. And the shower was not an immediate pass. So the RNIB provided a really detailed report back to Myra Showers and a summary with 8 key recommendations for further refinements to the shower. So these were made, and then this helped Myra secure the all-important RNIB tried and tested endorsement for the Select Flex shower.
Right. And what sort of research did you do and user testing? I mean, you must have had some sense of what the challenges are. I mean, I'm not, you know, I've never had a problem having a shower, right? So I'm curious to know where this came from. What was the sort of the problem you were trying to solve, and what did you discover in your research and user testing?
Yeah, and I think the principle of the research and user testing was about putting kind of yourself in the shoes of the user and a variety of users as well. We know that, you know, showering, kind of everyone takes a shower. So making sure we were looking at researching the product with different audiences and different stakeholders in that specification journey as well. We know that there's lots of different needs through to the specification manager who might recommend a product, an occupational therapist, again, sort of influencing that, all the way through to the installer, the contractor who are in someone's bathroom, and then the end user. So there's so many different people to engage with throughout that. So that was really the principle to do so, to speak to as many people as we could. That involved different depth interviews, design studies with occupational therapists, so opportunity to kind of have a hands-on interaction with the product, actually try out some of the features as well, all the way through to installation trials with contractors and maintenance teams, and then the focus group through the RNIB as well. So making sure we're using different methods and the right methods as well to get to different audiences and make sure their feedback comes through into the design.
And what did you learn? I mean, what were your sort of key findings? What did you learn about accessibility from working with RNIB?
There were honestly so many different learnings. And, I think the learnings from this project, from working with the RNIB, will extend far beyond the Select Flex shower. I think, there's sort of clear inputs that we've taken into the design, but there were so many more learnings that will kind of go forward to Myra Shower's future product development as well. For me, one of the biggest learnings that came through in the user research was the difficulty that partially sighted users experience distinguishing chrome plated finishes. So I'm thinking that most mixer showers are chrome plated. Chrome plating gives a really durable finish. It's easy to clean and maintain, but that also creates a mirror-like surface. So it's really difficult to see the controls, and if there's kind of markings on the product, how to adjust the temperature, how to turn it on, and things like that. So with the new Select Flex shower, we've introduced a completely different colour palette. So moving away from chrome plating to a matte finish. So that mirror-like surface is gone. It's much easier to distinguish in the contrast on those as well. And then we've got black and white colourways on the key touch points. So it's really easy to see where to interact with the product, how to change the temperature, how to change the flow as well. We've also introduced some audible controls. So the temperature lever clicks as you sort of move through the temperature. So it's a really positive feedback that you're selecting something. So I think that was kind of my biggest learning through the project. And again, that's something that will apply to our future product development as well, and far beyond this product too.
Yeah, just giving you a bit of certainty, because I think most of us just sort of twist the knob and hope, I mean, what are your thoughts on the new product, and what are the main benefits, do you think, for blind and partially sighted people?
So I have quite a lot of experience working at Myra Showers. I've worked for almost 15 years now, but I think Select Flex is really a step change in inclusive shower design. I think for me it's the product that offers the most difference and sort of different features as well. And I think it's the principle of accessible for all to use. And that was so important. It's inclusively designed, but accessible for all with that as well. So just to highlight some of the key features, the shower has an on-off button. So to your point about kind of turning the temperature dial and hoping, that means that you can leave the temperature at a set position and just turn it on and off with the button. So it's always going to be the temperature that you selected. There's no guesswork anymore to do that. So it should make it much easier to kind of use each time. And another really kind of different feature is the shower fittings. So these are height adjustable over a much greater range. So this means a shower can be used by a standing or a seated user in a wheelchair, and then someone with or without a carer as well. So again, just kind of bringing in different assistive and accessible features through the fittings. And then I mentioned the new colour material finish as well. So the shower visually looks very different. It's not chrome plated, which most of the mixer showers in the market are currently. but that kind of, it gives it a real distinctive visual sort of cue. So high contrast, black and white and matte finishes as well. So kind of a real visual step change, as well as the features in the product.
And how important do you think that accessible design is when making products for the public?
I think it's of the utmost importance. I think that's my key learning through working in collaboration with the RNIB. Allowing equal access for everyone, especially for something as important as showering, that is absolutely the objective. But there's also a design benefit. You know, I think creating user-friendly products that people want to engage with and use, and I truly believe that accessible design means better design. I think that's, as I mentioned, the learnings from the collaborative partnership from the RNIB. I think Select Flex is the first step of that, and there will be so many learnings that extend far beyond into other future product development at Myra Showers too.
Well, there we are, accessible showers. Who would have thought it? Well, where can we learn more, Susanna? What's the best place to find out more about Select Flex and the rest of the Myra Showers range?
So Select Flex is brand new. We have just launched it this month. But the best place to find out more information is the Myra Showers website. So that's myrashowers.co.uk.
Okay, and that's M-I-R-A.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Susanna Adey, Head of Product Marketing with Myra Showers. Thank you for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Recently on Tech Talk, we have had an email from Kyla from Idaho, and they were talking about a talking watch with adjustable volume control and Swiss movement, and asked for a demonstration. Well, I have been to the RNIB Products for Life store, and I have picked out just the watch. Now, the best way to find it on the RNIB shop is either contact the helpline and giving them the product code for this particular watch, or typing it into the search field on the RNIB shop website. And the product code is CW265. That is Charlie Whiskey 265, as there is no particular name listed for this watch on the RNIB shop website from what I've seen. But this watch is here, and there is a couple of unique functions with this particular talking watch. So the strap I've got here is a leather strap with the watch having a metal casing, which you can hear tapping. It is fairly metallic. Now, one of the few interesting parts of this watch is you can actually hear the time spoken, not only by pressing the button, which I'll press now. So it has announced the time, a fairly clear female voice there, as of this recording, that is the time. But you can also do it. So I've pressed the button to talk time, which is at 2 o'clock, if you are wearing the watch on your left wrist, for example, with the buttons facing towards your palm. Now, the other way you can do it is by tapping the glass. So I'm going to double tap the glass and see what happens. If you tap on the glass, you can also hear the time, which I find quite unique, because when I used to use talking watches, I have certainly not had that function available. So another interesting function is that this watch has standard watch hands, or are they? Well, what does happen is the spoken time and the time that is shown by the hands is synchronized. Now, what this means is if, for example, I change the spoken time on the watch, the hands will move automatically on their own in order to match the spoken time. Now, this watch only has two buttons to use, so it's fairly simple. And if you read the instruction manual, it will tell you how to adjust certain settings. This watch has a volume setting. Now, by a volume setting, you won't be able to adjust the volume of the voice by many increments. It is more a low volume setting or a high volume setting. So I'll show you how this works. As there are only two buttons, it's fairly easy to get into that setting. So you've got a button at 2 o'clock and a button at 4 o'clock. It's the 4 o'clock button you need to hold down for 5 seconds. The watch will then announce whether the alarm is turned on or off, and then it will beep twice, at which point you press the 2 o'clock button to toggle between low volume or high volume. So let's press the 4 o'clock button for 5 seconds. There are the two beeps. Now press the 2 o'clock button.
It's 6 o'clock a.m.
So now it's gone a bit quieter. I'll press the 2 o'clock button again.
It's 6 o'clock a.m.
And it's gone a little bit louder. So that is the high volume setting. And that is the beep that the watch did to confirm the setting because I left it for 5 seconds. So fairly simple. Now, before we go into settings, one little part this watch can also do is tell you the date. So if you press the 4 o'clock button quickly on its own, this is what will happen.
Tuesday, January 9, 2024.
So there we go. That is the date. But as this watch only has two buttons, I will show you how to get into the settings of this watch and what settings you can change. So in order to get into the settings, you will press the 2 o'clock button and hold it for 3 seconds. It will then enter the first setting, which will be the alarm sound, which you will then change using the 4 o'clock button. So if you imagine the 2 o'clock button goes through different settings, while the 4 o'clock button changes each of these settings. So we will press the 2 o'clock button for 3 seconds.
Alarm setting.
So alarm setting. I can now press the 4 o'clock button to switch through alarm sounds. I can now press the 2 o'clock button again to go to the next setting.
Alarm hour setting.
So I can set the alarm hour with the 4 o'clock button should I want to.
Alarm minute setting.
Then for the minute.
Year setting.
Now you've gone to setting the date, so I can set the year.
Month setting.
Set the month.
Date setting.
Set the date.
12 hours time.
I can then choose to do 12 hours or 24 hour clock, whichever one I prefer.
Time.
Then time hour, so if I want to change the hour.
Time minute setting.
And the times minute. And we are out of settings. And I've done all this by repeatedly pressing the 2 o'clock button. So it's a fairly simple watch to use. What you have to be mindful of when tapping the glass to tell the time is which area of the glass you tap. I find tapping it in the middle will get the best result, if you can, roughly, but you might have to just practice it a few times to get that particular feature correct. And of course, you've got the volume setting as well. So that is the talking watch. Thank you, Kyla, for your email. Now, one point to keep in mind, when you order the watch and it comes to you, it will come in silent mode to preserve battery life. In order to get out of silent mode, you need to press the 2 o'clock button and hold it down for 5 seconds. This will then take the watch out of silent mode because you will hear the time being spoken. It's a handy way to preserve battery life, and it is mentioned in the instructions manual, but should you not want to read the instructions manual, we recommend you do. That is how you get out of silent mode. So I hope you've enjoyed this short demonstration of this particular talking watch. Just a reminder of that all-important product code to either provide to a member of RNIB staff or to put into the RNIB shop website search field. It is CW265. That is Charlie Whiskey 265. If you want anything else demonstrated from the RNIB Products for Life store, drop us an email. It's that all-important email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And together with our colleagues from the RNIB Products for Life store, we will be more than happy to oblige.
Hubert Pavalkovic with his demonstration of the RNIB talking watch, complete with adjustable volume. Hubert, come on, be honest. Do you use a talking watch?
Not anymore, because I do have an Apple Watch and my phone, but...
Well, that talks, doesn't it?
Well, that technically yes. Watch. Technically, you can say that, yes. I mean, yeah, that's true.
Well, there's no technically. It does. It talks. If you switch on voiceover, it'll start talking at you. Callum, have you got a talking watch?
Well, I guess if we're being technical about it, then yeah, because I've also got an Apple Watch. It doesn't feel like a talking watch, though. I think that's the difference, because you've got that. There's something about voiceover that's just different. For me, it doesn't feel obvious that it's talking. Whether that's because you can really personalize it, you know, you can change the volume, you can change the speech rate, you can even change the voice. So you can have it. Like for me, I have it speaking really fast. I know that's not the case for everyone, but you can have it. Even though it talks, you can still have it really discreet. I've also got the Bradley watch, and these are the two that I kind of flip between, the Apple Watch and the Bradley tactile watch, which is, there's like tactile markers for each number, slightly different lengths of markers between on the 12, 3, 6 and 9 numbers. And then there's little kind of ball bearings that go around to tell you the time. And apparently it looks really good, like really stylish. It's always a bit of a conversation starter, is that watch.
Yeah, I mean, I am being slightly facetious because, of course, we are talking about different things when you think about a talking watch that just announces the time and does the alarm, and then a smart watch that you've got all the fitness features and messaging and payments and media and all of that stuff. So when would you get out the Bradley then, Callum Stoneman? When would you take the Apple Watch off and prefer to wear the Bradley?
It depends what I'm doing. I mean, the Bradley watch, I think, is a bit more of a stylish thing. So if I'm going somewhere where you've got to be kind of dressed up, I think the Bradley just fits in a little bit better. Not to say the Apple Watch stands out in that situation, but I think it's just, you know, it's more of a piece of jewellery is the Bradley than the Apple Watch is. Where the Apple Watch for me is a piece of tech, whereas the Bradley watch is just more of a proper watch. And I don't tend to take the Apple Watch on holiday with me as well, just because it's another thing to charge. Sometimes it's nice to be able to go out for walks or something when I'm on holiday and have that tracked, but I don't really care about it as much when I'm on holiday, because chances are my phone's not connected anyway, because I just tend to switch off from everything. So they're the occasions where I use that. But it is, I mean, both those options are, if you just want to know the time, the Apple Watch is definitely overkill. Especially, I mean, if you've not got an iPhone, then it's not going to work for you at all. And the Bradley watch is a lot more expensive than some of the more traditional tactile watches out there.
Well, there we are. Tactile watches, talking watches. Do you use a watch? Do you wear a watch? Do you like a watch? Do you kind of dress it up, dress it down? Is it about fitness, messaging, media, or something else for you? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, thanks for your time. Each January, the technology year kicks off with the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. The show has been running for around 40 years and attracts hundreds of thousands of visitors across multiple venues. And looking at this for us, exploring some of the technology on show from a distance, but also exploring what this means for our community as blind and partially sighted people, we are joined by the Director of Assistive Technology from Leonard Cheshire, Steve Tyler. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio, Steve.
Hi, Dave. Hi, everybody.
Now, Steve, I guess the first question is, was it a good one this year? Because each year with CES, of course, there's lots of stuff around screens, you know, smart TVs and computer monitors and so on. And then we get into the sort of the weird and the wacky. Overall, do you think this year's Consumer Electronics Show, is it one to remember, or do you think it's kind of more of the same?
I think the overall observation for this year is AI featured very heavily, and we'll get into that in a minute. The other standout thing is this year there was an overt focus on accessibility and real contributions there. And then thirdly, I think I'd say the pundits tend to be thinking more that it's still very big, so you don't take anything away from it where that's concerned, but not as big as it has been. And part of the reason for that is a lot of organizations are beginning to realize that actually you can get the press to come to you. So people like Apple have traditionally not turned up at this event. They did in the early days along with everybody else, but these days they don't. They host their own events, invite press that they want to turn up, and there you go. More and more organizations are taking that view. And so although it was still very big and very flamboyant and all the rest of it, it didn't quite have the same feel, according to the press pundits, that it's had in the past. But it's also an opportunity to sort of show off slash test out ideas that may never see the light of day. So there are lots of products there which almost certainly won't actually turn into a viable product, but they are a concept which maybe paves the way for where things are going, or they're testing out ideas to see whether they fly, and then, you know, if they do, well, you know, maybe take it on.
So some stuff you might be able to buy this year, some stuff that you'll probably never be able to buy, but really moves the conversation on in terms of a particular area of technology. So just talk us through then, Steve. You've identified a few themes and a few products on show that you think are of particular interest. So just walk us through some of those, if you would.
Well, I'll give you the mainstream stuff first, so you get a feel for the kind of things people are doing in the mainstream. Everyone's raving about mixed reality glasses, mixed reality goggles, mixed reality anything. One of the ones that has come to the fore is a Sony concept, which is basically a pair of goggles which can blend information in the real world and then deliver data that's, you know, that it's deriving from elsewhere. Apple, as some of your audience will know, is working very much on this area, but Sony have got there first in terms of delivering a product. So this is very much aimed at the consumer market. £699 for YouGov,
but a little bit more affordable than the price expected for Vision Pro.
Indeed, several grand.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing about Vision Pro is it's a little bit like the early days of Apple Watch, you know, that reports are suggesting that if you're in the market for a Vision Pro, you will go to the store for a fitting, and it will be set up for you, and you'll get, you know, a seal that's designed to fit your face and all this kind of thing, you know, that it'll be a very bespoke experience. In the way that, if you remember when Apple Watch first came along, you know, they said, well, you need to come in, you know, you need to have a fitting, you need to make sure that the experience is somewhat controlled, I guess.
Apple are taking the approach of it's going to be a first-class early adopter product, and everything that you've just described, you've got to be pretty keen on this stuff, given that who knows where it's going and will they continue with it? I'm sure they will in some guise, but, you know, is it something that is going to be developed further or not? Well, who knows?
And what are Sony saying, like, with their augmented reality glasses or headset? What?
This is a very much more straightforward proposition on one level. It's, you know, linked to, you can look things up while you're traveling, so it all appears before you. You can synchronize map data, for example, while you're looking at the environment around you. You can get information on what you're looking at through Google and chat GPT-4 with the chat AI product. So they've integrated artificial intelligence into it. And it's worth saying there are a range of other products not dissimilar. They're all of a type, though. They're all about how do you blend artificial reality or information that you derive from the web along with, you know, what you're seeing in real time. Now, just to touch on an accessibility issue, there is a real world use for these, which has been awarded one of the accessibility prizes this year, which is for people with hearing impairments or deaf people, which is glasses exactly as I've described, but this time delivering textual information based on what people are saying or information it's deriving from the environment.
So kind of live subtitles almost.
Live subtitling,
yeah.
Yes, on your glasses.
What else was there, Steve?
There are lots of little kind of interesting devices. There is a thing called the Clicks Creator Keyboard.
Is this the clicky keyboard for your phone?
It is. It's one of them. There are various ones. So interesting, because people have always been concerned. I mean, you know, lots of people don't like touchscreens, find touchscreen difficult. And also, there are genuine challenges with touchscreens. You know, if it's too cold, your hands are too dry, you know, all sorts of reasons, or too wet, you know, touchscreens won't work. And in any event, you know, when it comes to typing messages or whatever, or inputting information to your phone, or having it in your pocket but still being able to control it, there's always a search for how people can more effectively control devices around them. So the Clix Creator is one of those.
That could be of particular interest, I think, for our community. I know you have evaluated many, many Bluetooth keyboards over the years. I don't know how much sighted people really want to use their phone while it's in their pocket, because they want to look at it at the same time. But obviously, if you're using VoiceOver or Braille or, you know, some other access method, then actually having a physical keyboard and your phone away may well be an advantage. You know, we've got things like Haber One, for example, but this is a mainstream QWERTY device.
Yeah, that's the difference. These are mainstream devices, which of course give it, in theory at least, the level of longevity, maybe easier to access pricing. But again, some of these are out there as a sort of, look what we can do. Do you like it? If you like it, we'll make it. And if no one does like it too much, well, perhaps not.
And do you understand what's the difference between this Clix keyboard and the other Bluetooth keyboards that we've had for years now?
You can attach it in various different ways, and there's various different cases, and it becomes part and parcel of your product. So it's not a separate thing that you have in your pocket. The idea is it's part and parcel of your phone as a single unit, or your device as a single unit. Then there are things like Demo or Deamo, D-E-A-M-O. And this is one of those kind of test products. Who knows, you know. So it's a stick-shaped thing. It's got a thermometer, an oxygen meter, an ECG monitor, and a stethoscope all in one. 240 quid to you. Quite why you want to carry a stick. I mean, it connects to your phone. It's got apps that support it, etc. It's kind of another widget that is looking, it's sort of doing what smart watches are trying to do, but this time it's being proposed as a sort of standalone health monitoring technology, which gives you a lot more information, is more focused on your health. And then you've got absolutely left field stuff like, so AI is finding its way into things like hair dryers. So L'Oreal have produced such a thing. It's got connected app. It uses infrared heat. It's designed to save energy. The price is so far undisclosed. So you're seeing all sorts of stuff where AI, the environment, energy saving stuff is all kind of being wound into whatever product you care to imagine. And then in a really specific kind of focus, how do you make technology more human or more human feeling? There are a number of products out there at the moment where, you know, which come in the form of apps or websites or whatever. So there's a big focus, for example, on girlfriends and boyfriends that in fact are AI chat driven. But then there are real products that that look and feel more like human beings, or deliberately are not human at all, but they have a head, they have arms. There's a thing called AI agent, and the idea is it can control the home and do all sorts of things for you, with you, you know, wanders around looking after your products or picks things up that you've dropped for you. But it kind of has an element of humanness, and some of them really try to make it into a human looking feeling product. Some of them deliberately don't, but nonetheless it has capabilities like limbs and eyes and so on.
It's interesting, isn't it, that often technology is blamed for isolation and loneliness, and then there are those in the industry who are working on technological solutions to combat loneliness, which we know in our community a lot of blind and partially sighted people report feeling isolated, find it difficult to get out.
Yeah. In a not dissimilar thing, there's a thing called Wheels, which is designed to be a robot meter and greeter of your home, but it acts too as a hub. So it can wander about your home and do things, but the idea of it is it's human enough to come to the front door, let people in for you, recognize who they are. So it's sort of a moving, I kind of think of it as, you know, a lot of people know about Nest and things like that, camera technology built into doorbells and so on. Well, this is a moving version of that, but it can talk to you, it can engage with you. And the idea, of course, is it can bring you things but it acts as part of your overall smart home capability. So very briefly then on the specifics around accessibility, because for the first time this year, there were some accessibility awards. And in particular, they focused on accessibility or on products that actually are going to see the light of day around market, or they already are on the market. And they're recognizing them as coming out of Consumer Electronics Show. Everything from very low tech to very high tech. So, for example, there's an LG Universal Accessibility Kit. So these are made out of environmentally responsible materials, and they're designed for the whole LG range of products to make them more accessible. So where you've got touchscreen based systems, or you've got, you know, washers, dryers, fridges, cookers, etc., you've got half a chance of making them more accessible by sticking them on. Or so it's very, very manual, but they've been designed in eco-responsible ways, and LG doing their bit around accessibility. There's eSight Go. The idea is that it can help people reach 2020 enhanced vision through eyewear, an intricate set of sensors and eyewear which give enhanced stabilization to the environment, all sorts of stuff, and you can tweak it for your particular eye condition. Now, this is not, they're careful to say, a panacea for partially sighted people. It really depends on your sight level, it depends on your type of sight, all sorts of provisos. But nonetheless, they're throwing enhanced vision capability very specifically into the partially sighted market. There are, I mean, Garmin has produced a smartwatch for health and fitness, as it often does, but this time there's a particular focus on wheelchair using public. So it's particularly targeting health and wellness for wheelchair users and focused around that.
I do wish Garmin would make one that talks.
Indeed. There's, think we covered the talked, but now it's seen the light of day. They finally called it Noki Logics. It's a set of smart earbuds, but this time they're neurally controlled. So although it looks like a Bluetooth headset, it's got embedded sensors. It detects brainwaves and muscle movement. So basically, if you've got movement challenges or orientation challenges or unable to communicate in standard ways, by the movement you have got and or a mix of brainwave patterns and all the rest of it, brainwave pattern reading and all the rest of it, you can control the environment around you. You can communicate through third-party AAC devices, you know, a range of things like that. Now, that is very interesting, especially focused on, I mean, I work in an environment where we support people with really very significant challenges around movement and so on. And one of the things that I've been looking for years, I mean, we've got clients who are able to, they've got a wheelchair that they can control, but they've got very limited movement. If they run into trouble, so if they get stuck somewhere, or the wheelchair runs out of power, or it gets wedged into a corner in their home, there isn't an easy way for them to call for help or to communicate with anyone or let anybody know where they are. And this could be one of the solutions amongst many that do this.
Indeed. Well, there you go. Let us know, what have we missed? If you've been following the Consumer Electronics Show like Steve Tyler, we'd love to know your reactions. Were there any announcements that got your interest? You can write to us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K @rnib.org.uk. Steve, as we wrap up, any final thoughts from you?
I'm really pleased that accessibility is now a feature of the show. I can't tell you how big a deal that is on one level. If nothing else, it brings awareness in mainstream press, etc., in terms of serving very different needs and different requirements. WISP is a really interesting example where, so this is a device which takes slurred or difficult to understand speech. And you can even take samples of your voice and it will convert it into more regular sounding speech. Now, these are really, you know, if you now go to any undergraduate in any university where you've got a bunch of new undergraduates, you will find people with significant communication challenges there. These types of products are beginning to see the light of day, very possibly driven by, if you like, the more obvious nature of people, or the more obvious nature of disabilities in people who are being seen out and about much more than ever before. And I think what that's done is triggered a bunch of interest in this environment. So it can only be good, but at the same time, you know, you're getting some weird and wonderful development, sometimes beneficial, sometimes questionable. But we'll have more next year, Dave.
We will. Look forward to it. Thank you so much. Leonard Cheshire's Director of Assistive Technology, Steve Tyler. Thank you for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Cheers.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag Ask Tech Talk.
Hello and welcome to the next episode in the Getting Started with VoiceOver series, a series where I give you a bite-sized episode each week on how to get started with the VoiceOver screen reader, in this case on iPhone. In this episode, I will show you some essential gestures, some of them are for navigation, some of them are to carry out other functions, but it's gestures that you will be using quite a lot, and also I will show you how to practice them using VoiceOver practice. The first part is a simple navigation gesture to move element by element on the screen. So currently we are on the home screen, which has a grid of icons, which is four icons in each row, one row below the other. And I will start off with the folder on the top left, because in my case, I've got apps in folders.
Utilities folder, 33 apps, one new item.
So the way VoiceOver navigation works, and the gestures you'll be using the most probably, is the swipe left and right with one finger. So swiping to the right will move you element by element on the screen. So from left to right, and top to bottom. We are on utilities folder, so I'll swipe with one finger to the right as if I want to wipe something off my screen. So from left to right is the swipe gesture.
Productivity folder, 15 apps, 406 new items.
So it has moved me to the folder which is to the right of the utilities folder, which is productivity. I'll do the same gesture again.
Social folder, 16 apps, 48 new items. Games folder, 22 apps, one new item.
And that's the games folder. Now, that folder is the last one in the top row of folders. If I swipe to the right again, it will move me down to the next row below it.
Entertainment folder, 21 apps, 219 new items.
And you might have heard a little beep there, and that beep indicated that we moved to the next row on the screen. And it started at the beginning of that row, so you can go again and explore the row by swiping to the right, or you can go with the left finger swipe to go back through the row we just explored. So that's the two main gestures you'll be using to navigate. There is another alternative, which is moving your finger around the screen and VoiceOver will read what you are touching, which is a useful way of navigation, especially if you know the app very well that you are using, or if you know the layout of the screen that you are currently on. You don't want to swipe through every single element one by one, left or right. You can move your finger on the screen if you know where something is roughly located. But if you are a beginner, certainly that gesture, swiping left or right with one finger, will be a very good friend to you. Next is the double tap with one finger. Now, that gesture very simply acts as an activate gesture. So this is the gesture you will use to open apps, press buttons, open folders. If you imagine a double mouse click on a computer, the one finger double tap is a similar gesture. So for example, I will swipe to the right with one finger.
Online stores folder, 17 apps, 5 new items.
Online stores folder, I want to open that folder, so I will double tap with one finger. And that sound indicated that the folder has been opened and I can explore apps within that folder using the same gesture, swiping right or left with one finger. In this case, it will be to the right because I am at the beginning of the folder. I've gone back out of that folder though, and another gesture that can be done instead of the one finger double tap is what's called a split tap. This is where you put one finger somewhere on the screen if you know where something is that you want to press or open, and while holding that finger in that area of the screen, you tap once with another finger on the screen and that will open it. That's a good gesture to use when you are exploring the screen with one finger and you want to open something that you find. Not necessarily something that will work ideally if you are swiping left and right with one finger, but I will show you how this works. So, I will tap on
phone, one new item.
Phone in the bottom left corner of my screen, and I'm holding my finger in that bottom left corner. I will now single tap with another finger somewhere on the screen.
Edit button.
And now it has opened the phone app. The next gesture is to silence speech if it is getting a bit too chatty. Sometimes you might just have enough of that speaking voice and you want to stop it from talking. Well, I'll show you how to do that. The way to do it is simply tapping the screen once with two fingers. So let's swipe around the screen.
Mail, 1,309.
So I've just single tapped the screen with two fingers and VoiceOver was cut off, as you heard, so that's quite useful. The next gesture is the magic tap. Now, why is it called that? Well, because it does a lot of functions, and the gesture is the two-finger double tap, which can do a lot. This gesture is responsible for answering and hanging up a phone call, so if someone calls you, you double tap the screen with two fingers and it will answer the phone call, and if you want to stop talking to that person, you double tap the screen with two fingers again, just as you would with a single finger, to activate something and it will hang up the call. This gesture also plays and pauses media, so if you're listening to something and you want to pause it, a double tap with two fingers will do it. If you want to start it playing again, double tap with two fingers. If you want to start a dictation, if you want to dictate text, which we will cover in a later episode, the two-finger double tap is also your friend there. One more gesture to cover for you is the back gesture, which is quite handy before I show you VoiceOver practice.
Utilities folder, 33 app, settings.
We will go into settings.
Settings.
Now, to go into the VoiceOver practice area, you need to go to accessibility. So I'll swipe to the right with one finger until I find accessibility.
Accessibility button.
There's accessibility, double tap.
Physical and motor, heading.
So we are in the accessibility screen. Now, if I want to go back out of that screen, I can do two things. I can find the back button, which usually is located in the top left-hand corner of the screen.
Settings, back button.
But there is a gesture that you can also use in order to do the back gesture. And that gesture you can do anywhere on the screen, and it is called the two-finger scrub. Now, what this involves is putting two fingers on the screen and moving them up and down in a single motion. So two fingers on the screen, up, down.
Accessibility button.
And we have gone back to the main screen of settings. So I will take us back into accessibility.
Vision, heading. VoiceOver, on, button.
I will double tap on VoiceOver because that's where we want to be.
VoiceOver speaks items on the screen.
I will now swipe through the screen until I hear voiceover practice.
Double tap to activate. Learn more. Voiceover practice button.
Double tap.
Accessibility. Back button. Voiceover practice. Heading. Done. Button. Practice voiceover gestures, commands and typing in this area. Select the done button in the top right corner and double tap to exit. One finger swipe right. Move to next item.
So we are now in the voiceover practice area, and as you can hear, I have done one finger swipe right to move to the next item. And any gesture I do on the screen now, I will be told what that gesture is. So I'll do a swipe left.
One finger swipe left. Move to previous item. Touch. Speak item. One finger double tap. Activate. Two finger single tap. Toggle speech. Two finger scrub. Escape. Two finger double tap. Magic tap.
And just like that, you can practice certain gestures and you'll be told what they do. And that can be quite a handy reminder, especially if you're getting to know your iPhone for the first time. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope you will join me in the next one, where, amongst other things, we will discuss going to the home screen, to the app switcher, and notification and control center, which are also key areas of your Apple iPhone or iPad.
Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of another Tech Talk. Just time to remind you that the See Differently Awards are back for 2024. This is your opportunity to nominate an individual or an organisation who has made a significant contribution to supporting blind and partially sighted people in the last year. You can find out more on the RNIB website, so just pop on over to rnib.org.uk and search for See Differently Awards, and we look forward to receiving your nominations. But from all of us here at Tech Talk, myself, Dave Williams, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Callum Stoneman, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.